Hi, this is Ian with another edition of Grummelings. This week we have Charlie Stross, Ken McLeod, Farah Mendelson and Chaz Brenchley discussing...
Just many thanks to Chaz Brenchley, Farah Mendelson, Charlie Stross and Ken McLeod who joined us for the absolutely brilliant anthology Glorifying Terrorism. Farah, what made you come up with the idea of the anthology?
I just rather lost my temper. The government's managed to pass some appalling pieces of legislation in the past few years, and I've watched the treatment of immigrant groups and minorities with growing horror, but there wasn't a lot I could do. My mad campaigning days are well over. I don't have the time to get thoroughly involved in things. But when the Act forbidding the glorification of terrorism came along, it was just so obviously directed at literature, and literature is what I do, and editing is what I do, and this seemed to be the first opportunity for quite a long time to actually make some kind of solid protest. So I put out a call, and the response was so good I really didn't have the excuse to back out.
So you're always slightly with your own success then. What helped you with and for Charlie and Ken, what made you want to join in this anthology itself?
In my case, it was much the same motivation as Farah. It was sheer indignation. The law as drafted is nonsensical. They actually had to write a codicil defining who is and isn't a terrorist. Apparently the African National Congress and the IRA are not terrorists within the meaning of the law because they're good guys and we have to do business with them, whereas another armed group or the Animal Liberation Front are terrorists because we haven't had to reach some settlement. It's also an issue. Limitations on freedom of speech are dangerous, and this government in particular has a tendency to say, trust us, we're the good guys, when passing draconian legislation, without any thought being given as to who their successors might be and what they might do. We've seen this many times. For example, in Canada, the first application of laws passed restricting or banning pornography were police raids on gay bookshops, which were... Well, the original justification for the laws on pornography were put forward by Catherine McKinnon on the basis that pornography is demeaning to women. In what way is man-on-man gay porn demeaning to women, one wonders? So it was in the face of this sort of general background that any act of censorship is an attack on free speech and will have dangerous unforeseen consequences. I decided to explore a bit about how that would actually go in the context of this law.
I think why I contributed was that Farah twisted my arm. And I agree with what Charlie just said, actually, on the general point of free speech. And I had to rather rack my brains to come up with a glorification of terrorism on my own account. And then I remembered that in one of my novels, Newton's Wake, there's a quote from an imaginary folk song from the future, which, although it isn't quite clear in the book, but it's very clear in my contribution to glorifying terrorism. This song from the folk song from the future actually glorifies the worst act of terrorism in modern times. And I thought, well, if you're going to glorify terrorism, glorify terrorism. So take it on the chin. And I had been reading some political philosophy by, I think it was Ted Hondurek, who talks about the possibility of what he calls terrorism for humanity. And I realized that this and my, at that particular point in time, rage at the moral quibblings of what is grandly called just war theory, which basically says anything we do is all right, anything our enemies do is wrong, and 50 years afterwards, if we do something wrong, we'll beat our breasts about it, like we now do about the bombing of Dresden. It all combined quite neatly with some stuff from my memory, and I was able to kind of scrabble together something which has the very appropriate title, MS Found on a Hard Drive, which is more or less what it was.
Fair enough. And Chaz, you're not normally known as such a big political writer as both Charlie and Ken are. And what made you join in?
Well, what they said, what Charlie said, what Ken said, is the easy way to cover that. It is about rage, indignation. It is necessary that sometimes you just have to humiliate a law, or at least to point out that the law humiliates itself, which I think this anthology, Glory Fang Terrorism, absolutely does. So that's the... I'm not known as a political writer, though people who read me with care might spot that I have an attitude or two. But the other thing, it's always flattering to be invited. And it was an opportunity to write science fiction. I'm also not known as a science fiction writer. And when I first saw the invitation, it wasn't clear to me whether the fantasy that I normally write was what Farrell was looking for. So I thought, okay, I've wanted to be a science fiction writer since I was a teenager. I am now 47. It's probably about time. There was a creative opportunity as well as a political necessity, I think.
So thinking about literature and politics and political literature, given the government seems to be, or both here in the US, seems determined to turn ordinary citizens and anybody who thinks into a terrorist, does literature now need to directly not just tackle it, but start providing answers? And I suppose extending the blogosphere, which is showing how inanely stupid a lot of politicians are and a lot of these laws are and how ill thought out they are.
I don't think literature should necessarily be didactic, and I certainly think that the worst thing that could happen to literature, particularly science fiction and fantasy literature, is if it became an extension of the blogosphere or extended the discourse of the blogosphere. One of the curious things actually about the blogosphere that I just thought about only last night was that if you look at the actual figures for the percentages of people in America who think that the Iraq war is a disaster and that we shouldn't attack Iran and so on, they're very, very high. They're well over a majority. But if you look at the voices in the blogosphere, they would almost certainly be, and in my experience they are, at a much lower level. In other words, as Noam Chomsky has pointed out on more than one occasion, it's the best educated people who are the most stupid in terms of believing official propaganda. I think that ordinary people are perfectly capable of coming to conclusions themselves. It's when you're educated, articulate, middle class enough to participate in the blogosphere, to read serious editorials and serious newspapers, that you get suckered into all this rubbish. That's not an argument for not being educated. It's an argument for the educated people to self-educate rather than to accept what they're given.
I'm somewhat speechless after that, because early on while Farrell was speaking, my brain seized up and I began thinking strange thoughts. And the one that sticks in my head is, we are moving into a very, very dangerous historical period, one that's virtually unprecedented in the modern age, in which we are living in a panopticon. We are losing the illusion of privacy that we won with the Industrial Revolution and with the diminution of the role of service in households, so that we actually didn't have servants wandering in every 5 minutes. Privacy is a very 20th century concept. And one of the things, though, that we're that in addition to this panopticon we're living in, the fact that our actions are observable everywhere by camera and by tracking, is the use of data mining to make deductions which are inappropriately used to make assumptions about our intentions or our inner state on the basis of our actions, what we do. This is very dangerous indeed. Because the powers that be do appear to increasingly have an impulse to meddle, which earlier governments didn't need. But as more than half our primary legislation has now originated outside the UK, in Europe, and as economic management is no longer something they can wield the big stick over because we're so thoroughly globalized and interdependent on foreign markets and banking systems, in order to look as if they still have a job that is worth doing, they have to find new types of make work. And John Reed's suggestion about making paedophiles register their email address is yet another instance of that. But underlying it is a much more serious trend, a confusion of public actions with private thought. In a very real way, they're trying to move us towards a situation in which they have thought crimes to pursue. Not in the sense of ideological deviationism that the Ingsoc Party would have recognised, but in the sense of thinking disruptive or disturbing things. Having the wrong books on your shelves can now be taken into account when you're on trial for a terrorism offence. This sort of thing. We've been seeing this disturbingly. Anarchist's cookbook on a BNP member's shelf when he was found in possession of explosives. Hell, I have stuff that's that incriminating. I'm sure Ken Farah and Chaz have as well. We could presumably mount a defence that we're writers or critics, we need this for research material, but the fact that the question is asked in the first place is disturbing. Now, literature, I believe it was Stephen King commented that written works is the nearest thing we've got to telepathy, the nearest way we have of taking an idea out of one head and implanting it into another. This is something which is intrinsically threatening to the authoritarian mindset, because it's not something they can control directly other than by putting a roadblock in its way. They can't control what... The one thing that has been true of all tyrannies through history hitherto is they can't control what you think in the privacy of your own head. And to the extent that we are seeing an increasing controlling impulse in Western politics, that's automatically, inevitably going to bring them into conflict with literature sooner or later.
I think where I would actually disagree with Charlie is that this isn't a European tendency, this is a British tendency. Some of it actually comes from the tradition of Christian socialism, which Blair comes from, where socialism was about making people's lives better for them by telling them what to do. There's no way around that. I do find myself wondering if the fact that he grew up in a boarding school has anything to do with it. And that's just a stray thought. But Blair actually grew up being educated in a context where people thought they had the right to tell you what to read, whereas most people don't. So for him, it's something ordinary. For us, it's outrageous. But I also actually think that we're dealing with a government that is running into the risk of deciding it's got the wrong kind of people. John Major very definitely fell into this trap, that whole thing, we failed to communicate our message. No, you did. We didn't like it. I think Blair's got a very similar problem, and I think the whole business with the glorification of terrorism is actually a misunderstanding of the way people think and act. The other thing that came out this week, I think, was a survey saying that young Muslims were dangerously radical. Well, show me a young person with any intelligence who isn't dangerously radical. Most of the Jewish members in Britain of the people supplying guns to the Irgun in the 1940s were young. The IRA only made peace when they started getting older, and one of the divisions came when the young people said, but we don't want to make peace. This is a function of youth. To react to it as if it's something that defines who those young people will be, and therefore assumes they will become dangerous, is just a simple failure to understand people, which I find very strange, and I don't quite know why this is happening.
Yeah, a couple of things on that. I actually don't think that there is any really coherent ideology behind this law and laws like it. I think what we're seeing is a tendency to react with an ill-thought-out law, not driven by ideology, but driven by the peculiar character of modern Western politics, which is precisely that it doesn't have an ideology. So everything becomes trying to adapt to the centre ground and the focus groups. So that, quite frankly, it annoys me to see young Muslims with placards carrying slogans praising terrorist attacks or saying, Europe, you'll come crawling when the Mujahideen come roaring, as some people did in the protest over the Prophet cartoons. It annoys me, but it doesn't give me any impulse to say that should be illegal. Whereas I'm pretty sure that in the focus groups that the government consults, there were lots of people who were saying that sort of thing shouldn't be allowed. And it's pandering to that impulse that leads to the passing of very ill thought out laws like that. Or, as Charlie was saying, bizarre thought crimes like having material likely to be useful to somebody preparing or carrying out an act of terrorism. Now, quite honestly, on my own bookshelves, there is not the Anarchist Cookbook, which is a very dangerous book, because if you try to follow the recipes, you'll blow yourself up. But much more practical books about irregular warfare written by specialists in guerrilla warfare, not just the famous revolutionaries, but people like Tom Wintringham of the Home Guard, who published with a lot of official support and through Penguin Specials, a book full of techniques of guerrilla warfare, terrorism, sabotage, how to kill people silently and from behind, and so on. And all of that, technically, is material that could be useful to somebody contemplating or preparing an act of terrorism. The only reason such a law has been passed is, I think, it's reactive rather than reactionary. There's no big, dangerous authoritarian ideology out there. It's not like fascism or something like that. It's, in a way, I wouldn't say it's much more dangerous, but it's much more insidious, in that we are, without noticing it, we are slowly passing into a time when much that we previously took for granted is no longer taken for granted, and where you have to justify possessing books.
Thanks for listening. We really hope you enjoyed that. If you have any comments, you can email us at yatter.back@yatterings.com. We would like to hear back from our listeners. Thanks a lot. Bye.